Okay, so Buddhism and aging. So many years ago, I was on staff at IMS back in Barre, Massachusetts. And just for the fun of it, we did a little survey to find out what was the median age of meditators. No surprise, it was somewhere between 48 and 68. This was in 1995. So, what that means is that there's a lot of folks out there in the meditation community that are interested in meditation. And since we're talking about the heavenly messengers, old age, sickness, and death, tonight what I want to focus on is this first heavenly messenger, old age. Because if we're lucky enough, we're all going to get to that point. And I think it's really important to be aware of some of the challenges that come about as we get older. Because if we don't know what those challenges might be, we have no method for actually preparing ourselves as to how to meet those challenges. And not, we just don't want to meet them, but as Buddhist practitioners, what we want to do is, as Ram Dass says, we want to use the material as grist for the mill. So if we're really, as I see Buddhism, I think out of all the spiritual traditions, Buddhism is the one that actually offers us the most tools and the most vision for working with the challenges of aging. And so the first thing I want to just go through, this talk, there's not going to be probably anything new. There's probably not much that you don't know. But what I hope that we can do is somewhat reframe how you hold the experience of aging and how you hold your practice of meditation and try to see if we can't bring these two a little closer together. And I hope that we'll have some time at the end for some questions. So just to start out, just to give you some statistics, in 1900, the median age for someone to live was 50. That was as old as people lived. Today, men are expected to live to the age of 81 and women to the age of 84. But the fastest growing population is 100 plus. So that means that all of us sitting here probably are going to live into old age and into what in the field of gerontology now is being called old age. So we have old age up to 85 and we have old age 85 and up. And most of us probably are going to get there. Okay? So I want to first go, I know Jack Kornfield oftentimes, when he talks about starting meditation, he talks about insight is not good news. Well, that's true. And any beginning meditator knows within their first week of sitting that the truth of that. Well, it's true with old age too. The first bit is not good news. So we're going to go through the bad news first before we get to what we might do with some of this bad news. All right? So as I see it, the basic challenge in old age and how it links into the Buddhist tradition is that old age directly confronts our self project. And, in the Buddhist tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on no self, Okay, there's some monk who said, no self, no problem. But, you know, how are you going to get to no self? I mean, everything that we do in our life is built around ourself, from the kinds of clothing that we pick out so that we represent ourselves appropriately in the world, to the kinds of jobs that we do, to the speech that we use, to the house that we live in and the car that we drive. Everything about ourselves is about augmenting ourselves. And yet we come to Buddhism and Buddhism says, no self. And that's really hard to really understand what that even means, especially in our culture. Aging is a wonderful opportunity to begin to experience that. It's sort of, as I can see it, kind of life's gift to us if we are open to it. So, let's talk first about the body. Certainly the body is myself. You know, I might not be my thoughts. You know, I might not even be my emotions, but I am my body. But what happens as we get older, one of the first things that begins to go oftentimes is the body. And that even happens as young as 30 and 40. You know, we begin to have to wear glasses. Oftentimes we have to get hearing aids. Many of us have problems with our joints or arthritis. Some people may have bouts of cancer. So there's a lot of things. Our hair begins to go white. It begins to change color. We actually lose stature. We begin to shrink a little bit because our spinal cord, the cartilage in between, begins to kind of dry up a little bit, and so we lose height. And those of you who have older parents, I'm sure you've noticed this, if you haven't noticed it in your own body yourself. So there's also an increased need for medications. You might not have ever taken an aspirin in your life. You might have been one of those people that just said you didn't want to do medicine. But as you get older, medicine becomes a way of life. Our bowels don't work as well. We have trouble with our breath. We can't always get our breath. We might have been really good joggers. We can't do that anymore. We might have been excellent at yoga, and we just don't have the flexibility anymore. Balance is a problem, which is why actually Tai Chi is really good as you get older, because it really helps you with your balance. I think one of the biggest problems is lessening of energy, and everybody will acknowledge this, that it's just really too, you just don't have that kind of zip that you had when you were younger, and somehow you just can't get as much done in the day as you used to be able. So, and I wanted to, I have an assistant who works with me who's 25 years old and who's very attractive. She was downtown San Francisco in that new complex where Bloomingdale's is, and she was walking through the mall section, and some guy who had a kiosk set up there came up to her and said to her, I can get rid of those wrinkles for you. 25 years old. I couldn't believe it when she told me that. I mean, I looked at her face and said, let me see, where are they? I couldn't even find them, but this is the state of our culture today. I mean, I go into Yahoo and there's all these ads for Botox. I mean, this kind of advertising and this kind of emphasis in our society really is not helping our meditation practice. You know, it's really making us not be okay with who we are and with the bodily, natural bodily changes that happen in our life. So, the other thing is, I don't know about you, but maybe because I've been working with old people for so long, I really think an old face is beautiful. I really think that looking at a face that's quite lined really shows the life of that person. That's something that our society doesn't appreciate. And since we are constantly being bombarded by messages from our society, we end up feeling pretty badly about ourselves because we don't look the way we should. The other thing is weight gain as we get older. It just happens. It doesn't matter how thin you are. So that's just some of the bodily things. I mean, we could spend the whole hour going through the bodily things. But the next part is social, sort of just the many social losses that happen as we get older. We're retired, so we're no longer a worker. We're no longer identified with, being an engineer or a doctor or a bartender or whatever. That's no longer an identity we can fall back on. Maybe we used to ski. Maybe we were a wife or a husband and we've lost our partner. We have reduced income because we're not out there in the workforce anymore. So that means maybe we don't go to as many things as we would normally go to when we were still working and we could afford to pay for it. So in a way, I've often heard people say to me who are older that they feel like they're a stranger in a strange land. They don't really feel anymore like they're quite a part of our culture. And in many ways, they're not. They're actually left behind. So, and then moving into the psychological, there's certainly a loss of control. I mean, control is something that we always seem to need to want to have. But as we get older, we have less and less control over our lives. And I think most of the time, we have less control anyway. But we are able to maintain the illusion of control a lot easier when we're younger. When we're older, because of the physical factors, the social factors, we're not quite able to muster that sense of control anymore. And so things can become much more frightening to us. That also impacts on our sense of self-esteem and our sense of worth. Who are we? If I'm not this, 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 and this, and I can't control my life, who am I? So, the feeling of dependency, and as we get older, we might become dependent, especially if we're sick or especially if we don't have resources. And dependency in our culture is one of the scariest things. We have no instruction for dependency. There's a wonderful book. It's by a social worker in Washington called, her name is Wendy Lusbader, and the book is Counting on Kindness. And the first part of the book is interviews that she's conducted over her life as a social worker with older people that are dependent on either their children or a caretaker to provide various levels of care for them. And the second part of the book is interviews with the people that are providing care. So what is it like to be dependent? And any of you that are interested in really working with this material, I highly recommend it because these people are very raw and real in their explanation of what it feels like to be dependent. And then also on the other side, the people who are giving the care, what it feels like for them to be in that position. So there's loneliness at this time because oftentimes people your friends or spouse might die or they might move away. So the circle of people that you have so carefully cultivated and built up in your life may not be there for you just at the time when you most need them to be. So, and every time that we lose something, it's like we're losing a piece of ourselves. So we end up actually losing something that we have identified as I. Sylvia Boorstein, who you probably know, one of the teachers at Spirit Rock, she suggested that thinking of loss and its adjustment for herself, she thinks of it as the new normal. So every time, she's in her 70s, I think, so every time she goes through another loss, and she's still quite physically able and cognitively alert and all that stuff, but still she's going, her body is beginning to give out and stuff, and so she is reframing it to say, ah, this is the new normal. It's a very healthy way of going through the adjustment. And then finally, the last piece is the spiritual piece. Oftentimes, people sense a feeling of abandonment. And in the Christian tradition, that last piece when Christ is on the cross and he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And if you ever stop to think the word, my God, it's my God. Not God, but my God. So it's the conception that he had formulated about God that had to go. That was one of the last pieces that he had to let go of, that final conception of who or what God is. In the Buddhist tradition, it might be enlightenment, whatever our conception of enlightenment is or whatever our motivation is for sitting. You know, we want to be free. It might be that, but it's still my. And that my piece of it has to go. And aging will challenge it and will, if you're lucky enough, break it down for you. So the underpinning, I think, of aging, it's kind of like a crisis of I. Or the crisis of ego, if you want to put it in psychological language. But it's basically the crisis of the self project finally coming to the foreground because of all the stripping that has happened. And here we are left with this self that is no longer the self that we want it to be or the self that we have cultivated for our entire life. There's a man, Bernard Starr, who's a professor of educational and developmental psychology. He says, incompleteness now is tolerable only if there is movement toward a fantasy of future rescue. And when we're older, we don't have that fantasy anymore. Our fantasies, and well, you know, Scarlett O'Hara, tomorrow is another day. But we don't have another day. We may not have another day, and even if we do have another day, we may not have the capacity that we have in this day. So that's gone. So as far as I'm concerned, all that we've talked about so far is major dukkha. I mean, this is it. This is what the path of the Buddha is, recognizing dukkha. It doesn't get any worse than this or any better. So, normally what we do, normally what people do to avoid all of this is the most best coping strategy is denial. And our culture is great about denial. It Botox, you know, golf courses, lots of different ways that we try to circumvent all of these challenges that come to us as we get older. Won't happen to me, I'm doing just fine. Or we rationalize and intellectualize and we bury ourselves in some project. You know, the guy who retires or the woman who retires, well, now they're going to travel and see the world, or, you know, now they're going to start up this business on the side. The problem is not the traveling or the business or any of that. I mean, those are actually healthy ways of coping. The problem comes in when you do those things to avoid that sense of emptiness that you feel inside when you've retired, or when you have a diagnosis of cancer, or when you realize you can't see well anymore, or you're never going to be able to go skiing again. You know, it substituting things is fine, but not substituting things without first really being with whatever it is that comes up for you when you run up against the latest challenge. Another thing is projection. And you might hear this a lot, you know, oh, young people today, they blah, 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 blah. You know, the older folks do this all the time, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I remember, you know, I think sometimes I hear stuff coming out of my mouth, I think, my God, you know, I sound like my parents, you know, when I look at these young kids. But, you know, this is, again, it's a method of avoiding, you know, it really is. Depression is a normal response, but if we let it go and we don't really examine it, then it becomes a state of being, and we can't move forward at all. We're just stuck. Clinging to youth, so you know, exercising. Yeah, I'm going to get that body back in shape. You know, we have a lot of that. Anyway, the list is endless. So moving a little bit to kind of the positive end, and baby boomers, a lot of the so-called literature now in aging is talking about how the baby boomers are going to change everything. We're going to make everything wonderful when we're old, you know, because we did all this change years ago and we're going to do it again. So, one way, there's a Dr. Gene Cohen who wrote this wonderful book called The Mature Mind. And he showed in that book, he's a researcher, he shows how the brain actually rewires itself when something new is learned. Okay? So, again, this is a positive way of approaching aging. You know, looking at how are you going to keep mentally healthy? How are you going to keep mentally current? You know, this is important in the now, not in the past and not in the future, but in the now. Betty Friedan, who died, I don't know, just a few years ago, wrote that book, Fountain of Age. And she talked about, she says, through our actions, we will create a new image of age. I mean, this is straight out of Baby Boom. Free and joyous. Living with pain, saying what we really think and feel. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe, but not out of a sense of denying what's underneath that. That is really the thin walking line that all of us have to make in this whole approach to aging is, yes, being healthy. Yes, finding meaning. No, denying. No, moving over here to avoid all of this. Keeping young, never retire. So these all put a positive face on aging, but we run the risk of using these strategies to ultimately deny that there's any value in the experience of aging itself. So, the positive middle road. The spiritual, meditative, inner perspective, depending upon what your orientation is, it's always the least appealing. You know, the idea that we have to develop our level of consciousness, that we need to do more meditation or contemplative practice in order to hold this, all of this, it's the last place we end up going, really. We usually try to find something a lot easier out there, like a pill or something, you know, rather than doing the hard work of actually confronting ourselves and confronting what arises inside of us as a result of the changes that our bodies, minds, and spirits are going through. So, again, I want to quote Sylvia because she's been doing some good stuff. She says, spirituality is the recovery from being broadsided when we're old. I'm going to repeat that. Spirituality is the recovery from being broadsided when we're old. I think that is such a nice, succinct. She has such a great way of just being succinct with things. So, I think what I want to try to get across to you tonight is that as far as I'm concerned, aging can really be the final adventure. It's actually where the rubber hits the road. When you don't have all the distractions of work and family and obligations and all of that, or when they are minimized and not as involved, don't involve you as much when you're younger, this is when you really have the opportunity to put into practice all this practice that you've been doing for all this time. And Buddhism actually is the ideal method. Mindfulness meditation is the ideal method for working with these kinds of things. Ram Dass, when he had his stroke many years ago, he finally wrote a book called Fierce Grace. And his attitude in that book, he went through a period when he first had the stroke, and it was so bad, and he was really having a hard time with his speech, and he's stuck in a wheelchair, which he will be for the rest of his life. He didn't automatically start doing all this spiritual practice. You know, I mean, it took him a while to process and to go through everything that he went through. But when he finally came through, he came through by the attitude of looking at this major, major stroke for him as fierce grace. There's a video out on that. There's a book out on that. That, to me, is the attitude we need to adapt. And we don't even have to wait till we get old to do it. I mean, we can do something simple as going down the freeway and getting a flat tire. You know, I mean, I think we need to start when we're younger because we can't just wait till we get old and something goes wrong and then all of a sudden, you know, how are we going to cope with this? How are we going to make this experience work for us instead of against us? And so we need to practice now, and meditation is a great way. It's a method for helping us to do that. A psychologist, Carl Jung, actually the person that I'm doing a lot of studying on these days, he says, a human being would certainly not grow to be 70 or 80 years old if this longevity had no meaning for the species to which he or she belongs. You know? So you know this guy. And then I have a quote from this guy, Bill Bridges, who is a psychologist, and he's now doing organizational stuff, helping people in transitions. But he has this very well-known book called Transitions. And so you can look at aging as a transition. The transitions of life's afternoon are more mysterious than those of its morning. And so we have tended to pass them off as the effects of physical aging. But something deeper is going on, something as purposive in its own way as the development of social roles and relationships in life's first half. It involves, now this guy isn't even a Buddhist. It involves letting go of a particular kind of self-image and style of coping with the world. Seldom done in any single time of transition, this is the developmental business of life's second half. The transitions of life's second half offer a special kind of opportunity to break with the social conditioning that has carried us successfully thus far and to do something really new and different. So that is someone from a much more secular point of view, but still noticing this whole issue of self and how that is being challenged as we age and what we need to do with it. Then I have another, a Jungian psychologist, a guy named Hillman, who lives in Connecticut and is himself about 84 at this point. He wrote a book called Force of Character. So when it comes to aging, I am led to assume that there is intelligence in life that intends aging just as it intends growth in youth. As we unfold into speaking, standing, walking, discriminating, and mastering, so we may infold, once called the involution of aging, as we must unfold or develop to gain entry into the world, so infolding or aging is essential to our leaving. Not the leaving of life. We never leave life until life leaves us. We are alive until declared dead. If dying is a possibility from the very first breath, so living endures until the last. It is an enormous mistake to read the phenomenon of later life as indications of death rather than as initiations into another way of life. I mean, this is a beautiful way of beginning to reframe the whole experience of aging. And it's crucial if we ourselves are sincere about our meditation practice and also want to enjoy the last part of our life and not go into it with a bunch of resistance. And the final is, I just want to read a piece of this. This is from Jean Houston. Nothing's going to grow without suffering. The ruby is under tremendous pressure for hundreds of thousands of years. Fine leather is tanned. Fine wine goes through extraordinary crushing. Wounding allows for the opening of ourselves. It evolves into the holes that make us holy. So Buddhism starts out with old age, sickness, and death. So what are we going to do? I mean, we have some inspiration from these people, but what are we going to do with it? Well, the first step, as I see it, and as I've worked with people who are older, and as I've worked with myself, is first of all, there has to be an awareness. We have to be willing to allow the awareness of how things are into our bodies and minds. Not trying to fix it because that pushes it away, but actually just sitting with it. And our practice allows us to do that. Our practice teaches us to be with what is. That is the key to meditation practice. And so when you are with what is, you become aware
of what is.
So that's the first step. And the second is you want to identify and define what it is about aging that particularly discomforts you or particularly makes you fearful. Find out what that is. Look in the mirror. You know, that if you want to have an idea about coloring your hair, or you feel like you might want to have a Botox treatment, or your stomach is too big, instead of just reacting with that, stop a minute and ask yourself, where is that coming from? What am I trying to accomplish here? What am I shoring up? Bring this out into your awareness, into your consciousness. And then the third is learn how to work with underneath, what is underneath our suffering. Learn the difference between pain and suffering. I have this quote here by... This is from the Samyutta Nikaya. And you might have heard this before because it's often used in Dharma talks. But the Buddha said, when afflicted with a feeling of pain, those who lack inner awareness sorrow, grieve, and lament, beating their breasts and becoming distraught. So they feel two pains, physical and mental. It is just like being shot with an arrow and right afterwards being shot with the second one so that they feel two arrows. So do you get that? Do you get that difference between something happens, I break my arm, okay, and there's the pain of my arm being broken. But then what happens is on top of that pain, then I have all this other pain that, oh my God, is it going to heal? Will I ever be able to use it again? Oh, I was supposed to go on that ski trip, and now I'm not going to be able to go, and how am I going to be able to drive my car? So all those other things then create a second pain. So now you have it much worse than you did before when you could have just been with this pain. And that's exactly what it is in aging. You know, no, I can't hear anymore. No, I can't ski anymore. No, I have to give up the keys to my car. I have to leave my home. My spouse has died. My friends have moved away. Maybe my child has died. This is not uncommon. These kinds of things, if you can learn and practice now, using your awareness practice on how to be with these things and not create more suffering, what can happen is actually you can find a real measure of freedom inside whatever it is that is happening. Whether it's a pain, a physical pain, a mental pain, a spiritual pain, if you stay with it, you can actually find a source of liberation within it. And you'd be a much happier older person as a result. And we need happier older people because they are the people that our younger people are going to look up to and are looking up to. And if they're looking up to people that are miserable, that's not very hopeful for our younger people. So someone else I just wanted to talk about a little bit. I want to give a quote from, and I notice our time is getting low, is a man named David Loy, who is a Buddhist practitioner. He's a professor. He's mostly practiced in Tibetan Buddhism, but he teaches at a university in Japan. And he's kind of very mental, but he really has a lot to say. And his whole emphasis has been on the whole, how Buddhism holds the self. And so the book that I'm quoting from is called Lack and Transcendence, Existentialism, Psychotherapy, and Buddhism. This is what he has to say. In Buddhism, we say that the self is a construct or the self is empty. But I think all of us at some level know this, and we experience this as a kind of lack that we feel, a sense that something is wrong with us, which we understand in different ways according to our situation. Life is basically oriented around an attempt to fill up the sense of lack, to ground the self. The Buddhist path enables us to realize our emptiness, to let go of ourselves, to stop denying the emptiness. And this emptiness that he's referring to is exactly what all the losses associated with aging lead us to. And it's exactly where we don't want to go and where we need to develop a comfort with being. He says, we can learn to let go of ourselves, fall into the void, and realize we are a manifestation of it. This is what transforms emptiness from a sense of lack, because we are always trying to secure ourselves into something very creative at the core of our being. So when we talk about enlightenment or freedom, this is what we're talking about. It's this dropping of this sense of selfing that we have and falling into that space of so-called nothingness, but in that process, experiencing the fullness that's really in that emptiness. And that's really what Buddhist practice is about. That is really liberation. That is enlightenment, that sense of touching in. And we get that opportunity repeatedly as we get older. So as you leave here tonight and as you reflect on this talk, I would just ask you to pay attention to those times and circumstances in your own life that kind of threaten you in some way, threaten who you think you are right now. And use this meditation practice and understand that what you're doing by going into your anxiety is actually the path to your liberation, using the tools that you learn in the meditation process. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I really want to leave some time for some questions. I just want to, a few things here, that old age does for us is it loosens our grip on everything we think of as me and mine, so that the wanting self actually gets tempered with age, thinking of that. And Trumpa, go through it, give into it, experience it. Then the most powerful energies become absolutely workable rather than taking you over, because there is nothing to take over if you are not putting up any resistance. So I think I want to close there, because I want to just see if anyone has any comments or a question, or it's not exactly a question kind of thing, but maybe some of you had an experience that you want to share, or a comment that you would like to make, or a clarification. Yes. Okay.
And one is the name of the book about the person receiving care and the people giving care. And
okay.
The other is the Jack Kornfield quote about insight.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The first thing is the book is called Counting on Kindness. And the author is Wendy Lustbader. It's Lustbader. And Jack's quote is, insight is not good news. Yeah. Yes.
One of the cultural observations I've made is that the concept of autonomy is different in different cultures. In American culture, autonomy is associated with independence.
Mm-hmm.
In Asian and Mediterranean cultures, it's associated with isolation. And the dysfunctionality of elders who cling to autonomy as independence only actually mm-hmm. become isolated.
Yes.
And the antidote in trying to just get used to it, because it will happen, is that interdependence is a positive value
mm-hmm.
and is far more functional as our capacity for quote, autonomous function
yes.
diminishes.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. That's very important. And actually, those of you who have kids, give them a break. When it comes time that you can't drive and you can't live on your own anymore, do it with grace. Acknowledge it. Make the move, make the changes, because you're right. We have this notion in this country that we have to be fiercely independent, and it means that we don't need anybody. It's like John Wayne, pull yourself up by the bootstrap and on you go. And you can't do that when you're old. You really do need people. You can't do it on your own. Yeah. And so when it comes time to make those kinds of difficult decisions where you really do have to let go of this feeling of independence, you know, I've seen so many families just torn apart because mom won't move out of the house or dad won't move out of the house, or they promised they'd never put them in a nursing home and now that's the best place for the person. And yeah, well, it's 9:00, so anyone last minute thoughts? Well, I thank you for inviting me and paying attention and listening. And I do really hope that you will think about this, that this is sort of one thing to just think about as you're going through your own aging process or those of people around you that you love. So thank you.